Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and really pleased to welcome back Patricia McConnell to the microphone, adjunct associate professor of zoology at the UW-Madison, animal behaviorist, internationally recognized speaker and writer, and it's always fun to talk with Patricia about your pet's behavior. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. And if you have a question or a comment, I hope you will join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org. Patricia with us by phone today. Hi, Patricia.
Oh, hi, Larry. A big hug over the phone to you.
Yeah, happy summer.
Yeah, boy, it is summer.
it's summer. It is really summer. And summer, we're going on vacation in, 3 weeks or so. We have a place for our kitty, Tiger. And we're trying to figure out what to do about the fish. I don't know what we're going to do there. We're going to have somebody come in. But the bigger issue usually is you got some cats and you have a dog. Maybe you travel with them, or what do you do?
Yeah, it's a big issue for a lot of people. They want to have a relaxed, fun vacation, and yet they have these members of their family, and they're not sure what the best thing to do is. Well, the first thing to do is to recognize that there are two species involved. One is, or at least two, maybe three. Mm-hmm. One is your pets, dogs, cats, whoever. But the other is you. And I think it's really important if you're going on vacation to first think, it's perfectly okay to think of yourself first, and first think, how would I be more relaxed? Would I be more relaxed with my dog or my cats with me? Or do I sort of need a vacation where I just don't have to feed the dog in the morning?
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And then obviously the next one is relates to whether your pet would enjoy traveling, because some pets hate it. It's horrible for them. Others adore it. So the question of, do you leave them home, or do you have a house sitter, or do you take them to a kennel, is dependent on you, them, how much they enjoy traveling, and what you want to do.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of ways. You mentioned every possibility there, or most of the possibilities. We're farming Tiger out to our in-laws, my in-laws. So
great.
And Tiger loves being there, so it's going to work out great for us. The fish are another story.
Yeah, it's hard to farm the fish out. Those tanks are so heavy, and the water slops over in the backseat of the car. You're on your own there, Larry.
Same.
But, it brings up such an interesting question. I'm so glad Tiger has a good place to go where Tiger is comfortable. So, cats, the standard line about dogs and cats is that dogs are attached to people and cats are attached to places.
Mm-hmm.
There are a million exceptions, as we all know, and there are lots of very bold cats who just sort of plunk down into a place and walk around like, well, this looks fine. But then there are lots of others who are very stressed when they go to a new environment. So usually the question is, do you take them with you? Do you send them to a kennel? Or do you have a sitter come?
Sitters are good.
Sitters are great. I have to admit, I have a flock of sheep. I have a cat. I have a passel of dogs. There are no sheep boarding kennels that I know of. So I almost always have a sitter come. One of the things about a sitter to think very hard about is there are different kinds of sitting services. Most professional sitters do not stay overnight at your house. They come in once or twice a day.
Yep.
That works really well for some situations, but I want to tell you, it does not work in all situations. Some animals who are used to having you there at least all night, mm-hmm. in the morning and the evening, even if you're gone all day long, it can be quite stressful for them if somebody just comes in once a day. When you're thinking about a sitter, think about, do you want somebody to come live in your house? Is that best for your animals? And if you're going to have one in, frankly, I think that is absolutely ideal. Or are you going to have somebody just check in? If they're going to check in, I strongly advise they do it twice a day. Things happen.
Yeah.
Stuff happens. It just does.
Yeah.
And if you're like me and you want to be on vacation and not worrying about anything, better to pay a little extra and have the twice a day. Oh. But ideally, you'll have some young person who is thrilled to live in a real house mm-hmm. instead of a tiny apartment, and will come and actually stay.
That's the perfect. And being at the right outside the University of Wisconsin-Madison, we have been able to do that several times, and it's always been great to have a student come and stay at our place. And
isn't that wonderful? Yeah. I mean, we are so lucky, and anybody who's listening who has college, the vet school in Madison is ideal because you not only get an animal lover, you get a super responsible person who is at some level of education in vet school. Larry, we should shut up because we're going to, like, you know, lose our pool here.
We have
if there's something that happens to your pet, you know, bang, they have an instant connection to the vet school. My most amazing sitter, Jenna Bewley, who is now Dr. Bewley, up north in Cumberland, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. She took Tulip to the emergency room 3 times when I was on book tours.
Oh,
and,
boy.
Yeah, bless her heart. So that is certainly ideal. But, you know, boarding kennels for some animals, especially dogs, are like summer camp.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, boy, I got to go to the boarding kennel. But there you do want to do due diligence. You want to check them out. Kennels are profoundly different now from the old, you know, Larry, that old-fashioned kennel that has just a row of wire cages.
Yes.
Sort of nothing in between. That is not a good environment for a dog. I got to tell you, I would never leave one of my dogs in a situation like that. And I know I'm probably going to get letters from boarding kennels. But I don't think it's humane. It's very stressful. They can all see each other, but they can't interact. Barking noise gets the levels get very, very high. But there's so many kennels now that are so far beyond that have visual barriers between dogs. Some of them have beds and televisions. And, you know, some of them, it's like, Larry, you and I could go on vacation, and we'd be quite happy there. Be a little cheaper than the hotels we're staying in. Anyway, so do check out the boarding kennel. Absolutely insist that you can go back to the boarding area. Do not let some kennel tell you, well, we don't want the dogs disturbed.
Mm.
No. You absolutely must insist that they show you with pride what their kennels look like. I think that's really important.
Well, every one of our lines is filled, so we should take some calls.
Well, I guess we should. I guess there are a few pet owners out there who want to chat, hey?
I think so. Pat in East Troy is one of them. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Boy, have I been waiting for you, Patricia.
Oh, hi, Pat.
Thank you so much for providing this opportunity. Ever since March 3rd, when I found out you didn't have your other program, to my great regret, I got a very young, and I didn't know it at the time, very young golden retriever.
Okay.
She has since been spayed, but nothing has happened. She is the most ADHD dog that I ever, ever encountered.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And she has a little habit that she means to do without malice, but she bites.
Ooh.
She's just mouthy.
Yep.
And she's only broken my skin a couple of times, but I'm full of bruises from it.
No.
Oh, that's no good.
Now, how old is she?
I don't know what to do. Do you have any suggestions?
I do. How old is she?
She probably is a puppy mill refugee, and we're guessing she's between a year and 18 months.
Okay. And is there a pattern to when she gets so mouthy and biting at your arms?
Well,
is it on walks or at home?
She's perpetual motion. And she generates herself into a stage of excitement that is completely out of control, so I can't get her attention to do any training. She just goes constantly with this, and she's obsessed with toys.
Okay.
She even prefers toys to food.
Yeah, there are some obsessive retrievers like that. And in a way, that's a good thing, because you can use that as a way to teach her to calm herself. So there are a lot of issues here, and I'd love to talk to you for an hour and a half, but I'll give you the chapter titles, okay? And then you can pursue them. First of all, you mentioned she was ADHD-like. There are dogs who get ADHD. It's a physiological condition that there's no question is found in dogs. At least the symptoms are the same, And if you treat them with the same psychopharmacology as you do humans, you get the same response. So it's rare. It's really quite rare, and I would not pursue that first off, because usually you can affect it with through other means.
Okay.
But it is something to think about. And, you know, you'd want to talk about that. You want to talk to a certified applied animal behaviorist or a board-certified veterinarian behaviorist. The veterinarian would have to be the one to prescribe the drugs without question. But there are a couple of other things you might want to look at before you go down that road. And one, believe it or not, is diet. There, and this actually does relate to ADHD, children who have ADHD are particularly reactive when they eat certain foods. I've seen a lot of dogs who were just bananas, Larry, on a certain diet. And even if it's a really good food, good food, but you switch them to a different food and they do better. Maybe they're different additives. Perhaps the protein source is different. So that's one thing to think about. Pat, what is your golden eating right now?
Well, I've because of the diet possibility, I've changed her food three times.
Oh, okay.
And right now, she is on something called Nature. Just a minute, it's unusual.
It's okay. Don't worry about. Do you know what the protein source is? Is it chicken? Is it
lamb?
You might want to try what Chinese medicine calls cooling foods. You might want to think about trying a different protein, maybe duck or cod or beef.
I have tried those.
Yeah, you might want to think about trying those. There are some behavioral modification things you can try, and you might want to get a trainer in just for one session if you're worried about your budget as a coach, and find ways that you can help her teach herself to calm herself. And you can use toys to do that. So if you ask her to sit and stay for half a second, sit, stay, good, and then she gets her toy. Sit, stay, one thousandth. Okay, and then gradually and slowly, figuring it's going to take maybe 3 months or so to teach her to calm herself down. That can be incredibly helpful. So you might want to get a coach in, the trainer. You might even want to talk to, if you haven't had any hormonal work, any thyroid work done, talk to your veterinarian about that, or talk to a Chinese medicine veterinarian, because there's some acupuncture and Chinese herbs. So one of my dogs, Willie, young Willie, is on something called Shen Calmer, which is a Chinese herb to help super reactive dogs, which is what my Willie is, and it sounds like your Golden is. So there's a whole range of perspectives you want to look at, from medicine through your veterinarian, from diet. Sounds like you've done some work on that already, but you might want to think about a different protein source. I would get a trainer in as a coach, and I would look at Chinese medicine and acupuncture as an adjunctive onto a thorough hormonal assay from a veterinarian.
And good luck, Pat. Thank you very much for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your companion animal's behavior right now with Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist and longtime participant, shall we say, of programming here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Really pleased to have Patricia with us today. And certainly if you want to join in, the number to call is 800-642-1234. Ray and Barron is up next, Patricia. So let's go to Ray. Hi,
hey,
Ray.
Larry.
Yeah.
Before Ray, if you wouldn't mind going on pause for a second, bless your heart.
Mm-hmm.
I just, over the break, Larry, I thought of something I wanted to add to Pat.
Oh, okay.
A woman who had a ADHD-like golden retriever who
yes.
was just hyper reactive. One of the things that she might want to add into her repertoire is a CD of music designed by a musicologist and a veterinary neurologist to calm dogs.
Wow.
There's a book and a CD, and just a CD called Through a Dog's Ear. We have it on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's Through a Dog's Ear. There's a CD for your home. There's a CD for driving if you do take your pet on vacation, for example. Music to calm your dog in the car that won't put you to sleep, but will help calm your dog. There's some good biological background to the efficacy of this music.
That sounds
anecdotally
great.
I know kennels all over the country who are starting to use it now and have reported a significant decrease in barking and agitation. So I just wanted to add that into Pat. It's not magic. It's not like she's going to play it and her goldenness is going to turn into, you know, the mellow couch potato dog. But it's another thing that might help.
Well, that's great. And your website, Patricia, is?
It's easy. Just go to my name, patriciamcconnell.com.
PatriciaMcConnell.com. There you go. And now on to Ray and Barron. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Dave.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got really pleased to be on. I listen a lot, and usually I'm in the car, and so I'm against talking on a cell phone from the car. So I'm out in my gazebo this afternoon resting in my little nine-acre plot here near Barron. And we're lucky enough to be going on vacation in a few days, and we have a house sitter, a dog sitter, a cat sitter, and a garden sitter. So I know that goes along with your dream world.
All right. Good for you.
The second thing I'd like to just for a chuckle is that I'm a fan of rubber stamps.
Yeah.
And I do that in a lot of forms. And one of my favorite ones that I put on in the little upper left-hand corner of an envelope says, does the name Pavlov ring a bell?
I'm drooling as we speak.
and to go along with that, I have a little tiny, it must have been an antique bell for sheep as opposed to the big ones that you see on cows. And I have my dogs trained now that when I ring that bell, they know we're going for a walk. It's really amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
But my question here is that we have a young kind of a mixed lab Springer Spaniel type, plus an older also mixed lab, but he's really a husky guy, about 100 pounds. But they are so enthusiastic when we get anybody to come in the driveway that I become almost abusive, almost to my embarrassment and the embarrassment of my company, that these dogs just go crazy. And I'm just wondering what means you might suggest for me to keep my ire down and to kind of elicit a little bit of control from the dogs.
Yeah, so this is training both species, right?
Yeah,
this is usually what we have to do. I so understand about overly enthusiastic dogs. So many of us have that challenge. I do, too. I've been working on Willie for 3 years. I can tell you he's 95% better.
But
I'm still
working five.
On him because I call him a golden retriever in a tuxedo because he's a little black and white border collie that goes crazy. He's so happy. So here are a couple of things. One, for your dogs, and then for you. First of all, for your dogs, work really hard on using positive reinforcement to teach an incompatible behavior. And sometimes with lab crosses, the easiest thing to do is teach them whenever they see company to turn around, run the other way, and get a toy and bring the toy to the company. And a lot of dogs can be easily trained to do that. And they come up like little two-year-olds. It's like, look what I've got. But then they don't want you to take it. But that's fine because they're damped down because, one, they've taken that initial energy. They've run back to get the toy. They're not jumping up on your guests anymore. So usually you want to do that one at a time. In order to do that, the first step is often to teach your dogs to run into another room or to a kennel or to a crate when the doorbell rings or when somebody drives up. And that's not that hard to do. You just pretend somebody's driving up, or you have a friend drive up, and then you go running the other way, put them where you're going to put them, throw a whole bunch of treats on the ground, and you do that 3-4 times in a row, and they're like, yee, we love this game. This is a good game. Somebody drives up, I turn around, go the other way, I get chicken. So you can do that, and then you can start teaching one at a time when you come out to see your visitors that you can go get a toy, or you can sit, good dog, treat, 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 and have the visitor give them treats when they're sitting. Because they want to greet the visitor. If they keep jumping up, then just have the visitor turn and walk away. It's like, oh, I don't get to greet you anymore. So they're getting reinforced for something that's good, and they're losing what they want if they do the wrong thing. So that's all very workable. But now I want to say something about you, because I so understand getting frustrated. It's very common. We've all been there.
We've all been there.
Yeah, and so, you know what, remember that if your dogs are out of control, if you raise your voice, you're adding energy, and that's just making it worse. So the default of us primates is our dog's doing something we don't want, we say no or something, they don't stop, and then we yell no really loudly. And if that doesn't work, we'll yell it louder. Well, sometimes that, to a dog, I think, it just sounds like you're barking. What do they know what you're yelling, right? It just sounds like you're barking, and you're adding energy, and you're actually making it worse. So if you're working on doing this other training, you too are changing your own behavior. Whenever you find yourself just starting to get, frustrated and agitated, I want you to turn around and walk the other way. Just turn around, go the other way. You know, nothing bad's going to happen. They've been jumping up for how long, right? So just turn around, go the other way, take a couple of deep breaths, and then think, what do I want them to do, and how can I get them to do it?
Very good advice. Good luck. Thank you very much for that question. Diane in Appleton, we'll turn to you. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And just wanted to tell you, Patricia, I really miss your show on Saturday.
Oh, thanks, Diane. That's sweet to hear. I miss all of you, and I miss Larry, too.
You helped me many times. My problem is I have a scaredy cat, a true scaredy cat. And I took him in 4 months ago when my daughter moved to California and couldn't take the cat with her. And he has gradually gotten acclimated to my two cats that I owned. However, occasionally, every 2 to 3 weeks, he will urinate on something.
Hmm.
And at first it was the loose rugs, so the throw rugs, so I took those up. And then I found out he was doing it on my 5x7 rug in the living room.
Ooh,
so that
dear.
Went. Thankfully, I've got hardwood floors, so I don't need rugs on the floor. But the other day, so this has been approximately every 2 to 3 weeks, I will find him urinating. He will do it right in front of me. And the other day I came home and found out the shoes that we take off inside the front door,
yeah.
My new shoes were all wet.
Oh, no. Your new shoes. Oh.
Yes. So I called my daughter and I said, this is it. I've been trying to be very nice to your cat, but I just don't know if there's any way I can rehab them.
Yeah.
All my cats are male. They're all neutered. They range from that one, which is 2. The other one is 4 years old, and the oldest one is 9 years old.
How many
get along okay. They're accepting of each other.
Okay.
How
many boxes do you have, Diane?
I have 3 litter boxes, and we clean them every day with it's a scoopable litter. And they're all downstairs and 3 different walls right near each other.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of things that could be going on. Usually the two most common motivations for urinating outside of the box are either there's something about the box or its location. Maybe it's in the wrong place. Maybe it's been guarded by other cats. Or completely independent of anything about the box, a cat is anxious and is trying to, as best we can tell, is trying to surround himself by a familiar scent, sort of marking territory in a sense of, this is mine, and I need to do this because I feel insecure. So there are a couple. So I would look at all those possibilities. If you have 3 boxes and they're all downstairs and there's only one way downstairs, that's a possible problem. Without question, at least for a while, I would bring a box upstairs. And believe me, I sympathize. I have my box right in the bathroom. I'd rather it wasn't there. I just, you know,
yeah.
But it's just what it is. So I would put a box, make it a relatively big one. Sometimes boxes are too small. Don't put too much litter in it. Use the same litter. Put it upstairs somewhere where you can handle it, but it's easily accessible by the new cat. That's one thing that's important to do. The other thing is I would suggest trying that product called Feel Away,
mm-hmm.
which have you tried that?
No, I was thinking of that myself.
Do try it. It's really an interesting product. It's an artificial replicate of a scent that is of a pheromone that is distributed usually through the cheek glands of a cat who is in a affiliative, relaxed mood. So believe it or not, it actually can have the effect. And by the way, there's no scent. You can't smell it, but the cat can't even smell it. But it's received by the nose, it's received by the brain, it's received by the limbic system, the emotional system in the brain, and it can act to calm and soothe anxieties. There are different forms of it. It comes in a spray. It comes in a plug-in. I always suggest people, at minimum, try the plug-in because, hey, it's the perfect behavioral problem, right? You plug it in and,
yeah,
you know,
there it goes. Yeah.
The ideal behavioral modification system. You buy it, you plug it in. So look at the box carefully that comes in because there are different sizes that it can diffuse into, et cetera. But I would definitely try that. You might want to, I don't know if you talk to your veterinarian, but usually if it's every 2 to 3 weeks that an animal is urinating outside of the box, it's usually not a medical issue, but it's always wise to have that checked out, too.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, that's what I assume, too, that since he, you know, he calmed down since he's been here. He used to hide out. Now he just gets along real good with the other cats. He tries to be aggressive to them once in a while. I was hoping that this, you know, he goes 2 weeks and I'm going, good kitty, you know, and then there go my shoes.
Yeah, that's ouchy on the shoes. The fact that he went on shoes, that's actually not uncommon of cats who are insecure because the shoes bring in a new scent. You know, even though cats don't, their noses aren't as good as dogs, they don't smell as well as dogs do, scent is incredibly important to them. So I see a lot of insecure cats who actually, believe it or not, go on people's shoes because they bring in other scents, and the cat wants to mark it. So try those things we talked about, and all paws crossed. Usually this is fixable, but just keep trying, okay?
Thanks, Diane, for calling. Appreciate it. Julie and McFarland, we're on to you now. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I have a question about dog park etiquette.
Okay.
Yeah.
My little... beagle mix dog lives to swim. And when we go to the dog park and throw a ball in the water, he's about as happy as he can be. He goes and chases it. And, you know, he could do it for hours. So our problem is other dogs like to chase his ball, too.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Yeah, and so I recently heard that maybe the dog owner needs dog park manners and that I shouldn't take a ball to the dog park. So I want to know, is that true? And secondly, I usually go with 3 or 4 balls in my pocket, and we just keep throwing balls until all the dogs are happy, but sometimes, obviously, we don't have enough. So is there a way to teach my dog that sooner or later he's going to get his ball back?
Hmm. What do you think, Patricia?
Larry can see me going, So, because I thought you were going to ask a different question. So what happens is another dog gets the ball first.
Yes.
And then your dog does what?
And then he will back up to the edge of where the little beach area is and just bark his fool head off.
Gotcha. He is a beagle cross, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
And that's what they do, bless their
yes.
hearts.
And you can just hear him saying, give me my ball back.
Yeah, I don't blame him. Mm. I don't blame him, not at all. I would be feeling the same way. There are a couple things. First of all, it's not a violation of dog park etiquette to bang a ball. People do that constantly. I think, frankly, that it should be a violation of dog park etiquette to let your dog go after another dog's ball.
But I can't train somebody else's dog.
Exactly. What should happen is one thing. What actually happens is
another. Yeah.
So this is a very tricky one because basically you're talking about the need to influence the behavior of multiple other individuals of several other species. And obviously that's really tough. So I can tell you the obvious, which is, just go there when there aren't going to be other dogs there, which, of course, is probably hard because you probably have the same hours everybody else does. But there's certainly a lot of people who know exactly the traffic patterns in dog parks, mm-hmm. and go there, go out of their way to go there when there aren't a lot of other animals there. One thing you could try if your beagle cross is never aggressive over food,
mm-hmm.
is if another dog gets his ball, instantly, as fast as you can, get him a piece of food. So he's like, he runs after his ball, other dog gets it first, and then he gets back to you and gets a piece of food.
Okay.
So he's like,
yeah, he
oh, yeah, well, that's
eat.
Not so bad. You can have the ball, but I get the food. Now, that might, you know, in some cases that might cause a problem because he might start getting possessive about getting the chicken and the food, and other dogs are going to be all over you and him and want the food too. So this is one of these situations where it's really hard to give you a cookbook answer. It's going to depend on sort of all the things that happen. Obviously, easiest to throw the ball when other dogs are there. Try reinforcing him with something even better if other dogs steal his balls. Try very kindly saying, oh, you with the Labrador, he is so cute. I think that, what a sweetie he is. You know, I'm making all this up, by the way. I used to have a Labrador. I loved him so much, and he sort of looks like my Harry. But you know what? My little beagle cross, this is the only chance we get to have his favorite kind of exercise. Would you mind letting him play by himself and taking your little sweetie over somewhere else? Always try that. Or you could always say, oh, I'm so sorry, my dog has parvo. No, I'm kidding. Don't take your dog. Don't say that. But see if you can gently and kindly influence the behavior of others with sugar and reinforcement.
Makes good sense. Someone, by the way, Julie's from McFarland, and I and Jim Packer tells me there's a park opening in August in McFarland, a dog park.
Ooh, that's good to know.
Someone else wondered, just for safety's sake, and this is along the same line, what should you know before going to a dog park with your dog for the first time?
Oh, that's a great question. Is one, you should know how your dog responds to other dogs. Don't find out where there are 25 other dogs who are going to swamp your dog at the gate. That's not a good time to find out your dog's not comfortable meeting strangers. So first of all, have a really good idea of what your dog is like when he meets one or two dogs. The thing I like least about dog parks is some of them are poorly designed, and what happens is when you enter the gate, your dog gets swamped by 25 other dogs. That is not a natural situation, and it's a very tense situation for a lot of dogs. It does happen, by the way. The thing to do is keep moving, just go, call your dog, just get out of that entry area, let your dog urinate. It's a great way to give him information to the other dogs without them having to sniff him quite
right.
So intimately and get surrounded by all these other dogs. So one, know how your dog is in terms of his relationship to other dogs. I would not personally want to take a dog to a dog park if he didn't have a great recall. Now, I know a lot of people don't have that, and they say, well, how am I going to teach it if I don't teach it? You know, it's a dog park. It always comes in the backyard, but the dog park is different. But I would just not be comfortable with a dog I had no chance of having any control over at a dog park, because some of them aren't as fenced as well as others, although they say they are. You know, you can get a whole bunch of dogs chasing a rabbit all of a sudden and doesn't get so pretty when they all get to the rabbit. You can have dogs getting a little tense and you think there might be a fight and you want to get your dog out of there. So I would work really hard on recalls in distracting situations. Use food, use running, use all kinds of reinforcement. And the other thing I'd like to know is a little bit about the dog park. I would maybe go there without my dog, find out when it's least busy. That's always a good time to go. I get a sense of where there might be problem areas, where the best areas are. Chat with some of the regulars. You know, often they'll say, oh, everything's great except at 5, there's somebody who brings a blank, blank dog, and we all avoid that dog. Get the lay of the land before you go. And they're just great for some dogs. And, you know, some dogs, I have two dogs right now. One is very old. One is young. I would never take either one of them to a dog park. It would completely overwhelm my young one. And the old one is just like, I just don't do that anymore. <You know? laughs> I'm deaf. And I'm partly blind. And I don't really need to go, you know, do that. I don't do rock concerts anymore. So be sure your dog that really is the best place for your dog. It's not best for every dog.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today, as we talk about your companion animals' interesting behaviors. Sometimes they're great, sometimes maybe not so great. Jeff in Chilton up next. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Patricia and Larry.
Hi.
It's nice to talk to you both. I sorely missed your Saturday morning program.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
Why I'm calling is I've got a dominance issue with my two dogs. Modoc is a retriever mix, and she's 7 years old. And then I've got a little Yorkie named Lucy. She's 3 years old. They're both spayed. And I think what the problem started was I didn't get Lucy spayed until she was two. I was considering maybe having puppies with her, but then I decided not to. But like even in the Lucy's always trying to dominate over Modoc, and obviously a 12-pound Yorkie isn't going to be able to get too far with a 55-pound retriever. And also, I did have the retriever first, so you know she was used to being top dog. Like if I let him out in the morning, Lucy will wait until Modoc urinates, and then she'll go and pee over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually lifts one of her back legs when she pees, and she marks all over just like a boy dog
does. Okay.
Anytime I get Modoc excited, like if I want to play or something, Lucy will get in her face, and you know if I don't put her in the house or you know separate them, a fight will eventually break out because Modoc will put up with it only for so long, and then she'll take her down. And
gotcha.
I don't usually, Modoc's not mean about it. She just will put her front legs on her and pin her down until Lucy submits, and then she lets her up.
Okay.
And I don't ever discourage that. I try to always give Modoc her treats first and let her go out the door first and those sorts of things and some of your tips that you've given in the past. But I just can't get her to just relax and be second in command.
Yeah, you know, there's a reason the B word is a dirty word when referring to female dogs. There are some female dogs that are extremely pushy, sort of with a queen complex, and you can't always completely turn her around. There are a couple things you can do. I actually have a booklet called Feeling Outnumbered. I have a DVD that goes along with it that relates to exercises you can do to help dogs learn to get what they want by being patient and polite, not pushy and trying to throw their weight around. I strongly suggest that you do that. I would teach Lucy downstays. I give Modoc all the credit in the world for occasionally creating these boundaries. I agree with you. If it's not turning into a fight, but she just sort of inhibits Lucy, basically, and sort of does a smackdown and says, just stop it. I'm just going to hold you down until you stop being so rude. That's borderline problematic, but I sort of like that she's doing it because somebody needs to create some boundaries. You can do the same thing when you see Lucy to start. Get your obedience such that you can call Lucy away, even though she's a little Yorkie. She's a terrier. She's smart.
Yeah.
Work on your obedience. So you can teach Lucy, you get what you want by being patient and polite. You can get her. You can teach her to get back. You can teach wait at the door. You can teach downstays.
Mm-hmm.
Basically using positive reinforcement to teach Lucy that she gets what she wants rather than throwing her weight around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Give it a shot.
Lucy, I mean, you could tell she's not comfortable being the top dog because whenever she gets in those little moods, I mean, her whole body will shake, but yet, you know, so you can see she's not, she wants to be, but yet she don't want to be the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do. I call them alpha wannabes. They want to be in control, but they're nervous wrecks.
Yeah.
I always thought of Nixon like that, and there's nothing about politics, but he just, as a person, he just seemed uncomfortable up there as president. Yeah, alpha wannabes don't want to be there. You're absolutely right. So use these exercises from Feeling Outnumbered, and hopefully that'll give you some help.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Patricia will be with us right up until noon today, so really glad to have her with us until noon. And then Daniel Mack of Warwick, New York, who's makes rustic furniture, will be our guest after our break at noon. But let's go back to the phones and Marianne in Eau Claire, who is up next. Hi, Marianne.
Morning. Oh, well, almost afternoon. Hi. This is perfect timing for me for you to be there. I have a concern about our little Dudley. He's a Scottish Terrier, and we rescued him from a situation. He had a pretty rough start in life, and he was a companion dog to our 110-pound yellow lab. Mm-hmm. And they were just one. Clancy became the alpha. Dudley just, it was perfect for Dudley, really. He was so scared. And, well, then Clancy passed away. So now we have Dudley, who is alone in the house, and his behavior is he's marking territory in the house. Mm. And it's, and I don't even know when it happens. I mean, we keep him kenneled when there's, we have kids, and there's a sign, if you are not taking him directly outside, do not let him out of this kennel. And it happens when I don't even know it. And then to shame him, it's just like he reverts back to that dog when we first got him. Because I don't think they ever let him out of the kennel for 6 months. So we had to do some serious training there to get him to even go outside, to go to the bathroom. And after all of that, I heard the woman with the cat about getting rid of rugs. I have no area rugs, thank goodness. I mean, thank goodness I do have hardwood floors. But I'm afraid for my furniture. I'm afraid for people to come over if that scent is in the house. And he's such a wonderful little guy.
Oh, sweet Dudley. How long has Clancy been gone, by the way?
Since November.
November. And when did the marking start?
Probably after the first of the year.
Okay. So there are a couple things that could be going on, but certainly there are a lot of things you can do right now. One is make sure that you have eliminated that odor. It's really, really important because scent is the same as a sign that says restroom to a dog. You know, we use vision. So when you're somewhere and you're like, I need to go, and you say, where are the restrooms? And they point to the left, and you walk and you look for the sign that says restroom and then women, and then you look for the round white thing, right? They go where it smells. Like a bathroom. So you have to use a product that neutralizes the odor. So be sure and go get a commercial product that neutralizes the odor. Any place you can find it. If you don't know where it is, you can do the sniff test. I have crawled around houses on my hands and knees numerous times, sniffing. You'd be amazed at how good your nose is. You too could get a PhD and crawl around on your hands and knees smelling for pee. And I actually have become quite good at it, but you can do it, too. You can use a black light that also, believe it or not, will tell you where urine stains are. So, one, neutralize. Two, I want you to go back to acting as if he was a puppy. I want you to keep him with you at all times when he's in the house. That means if you're in the kitchen, then he's locked. You got some made puppy gates or baby gates. He's in the kitchen with you. You're watching him. Take him out far more frequently than you normally do. And when you take him outside, put it on cue, say, go pee or go hurry up, whatever you say.
I'll hear us say, go potty.
Go potty. And then you have treats with you, in your hand. And as soon as he's done, you go to him and you give him a treat. Don't let him trot back to the door.
Okay.
Because then he's getting a treat for coming back to you in the house.
Okay.
I want him to go potty and just sort of look up and go like,
treat.
Oh, okay. What happened here? I always pee. I have to pee, and I got a piece of,
whatever.
Hamburger for peeing?
Okay.
And so I want him to think he's training you. Is that if I go outside, she'll give me hamburger?
Because he's even gone. I mean, we said about on the deck, he's on a run. And he will, he will walk right over to the barbecue. And go right on. I mean, I'm in here. I'm just, no, you know.
Yeah,
and then he just trembles and falls apart.
Yeah, do not. And you said something about shaming him.
I can't do that. I know.
Don't.
I have to.
Don't. If he starts to go right in front of you, I want you to say nope, and distract him and try and get him somewhere where he should go. And hopefully, there's some left, and you can reward
okay.
it. Don't shame him. Absolutely go. It's critical, critical, critical to not shame him after the fact. That's just going to make him more anxious. Basically, he's regressing, and that's, ironically, that's one of the symptoms of grief in humans, is that people tend to regress to sort of old bad habits or things they did when they were little kids. And you said he grew up in a kennel and was never let outside for 6 months. So he's still grieving over Clancy, maybe not consciously. He's regressed to behavior when he was little. He sort of lost his mentor.
So you might want to try DAP, dog appeasing pheromone. That's a pheromone that can relax dogs just like Feel Away can relax cats. You might want to try that. But I would also house train him as if he was a puppy and do not ever correct him after that.
No, I know, because it just breaks your heart.
Yeah. And it doesn't work.
No, and it doesn't work.
It
makes it worse.
Work at all. And it's funny, too, because like you said, to follow him around, right before I called, I had no idea that he had, I must have just turned my head.
Yeah.
And he went in the house.
I have never caught him in the house, ever.
Yeah.
He probably knows. And it seems so concentrated, like it would, if you don't catch it right away, it will take the varnish off the floor.
Ooh. That makes me wonder. Yeah. You might want to run by your veterinarian clinic, too.
Okay.
That sounds a little out of the box there.
That does sound a little out of the box, so to speak. In fact, we had, there could be some medical issue. Somebody emailed about the cat that was urinating right in front of the new owner. Could have a kidney problem. Kathleen says, my kitty started to do this, and I realized it way too late and lost poor kitty to a kidney failure. So, you know, there could be.
Yeah, it's really important, you know, especially when cats go right in front of you. I've always felt like they're trying to tell you something. So, yeah, so that's why I mentioned with that, talking to a veterinarian. And, you know, with the dog, too, it's a really good point. I'm glad somebody wrote in that especially if the dog is stressed, you know, that we know that stress, grieving, et cetera, can depress the immune system. So maybe there is something going on there, too. And so I would definitely talk to your veterinarian about that as well.
And thanks a lot for calling, Marianne. Appreciate it. And Kathleen also has a little kitty who spends a lot of time alone in her apartment. She's pretty smart, but can't help thinking she's lonely, Kathleen says. So she says, soon I'll be buying a house and we'll be moving there. She'll have, the kitty will have more space and windows and squirrels to watch and all that. If I get another cat as a companion, would it be best to get a boy or a girl, the second one, before we move, after or at the same time?
Well, it's a good question. First of all, the question about whether you get a boy or a girl is an interesting one. For years, me included, I should say, truth in lending here, used to say, if you have a female cat, then you're going to get another one. You should get a male, which is still true with dogs. But, you know, cats aren't little dogs, and as it turns out, the research has been done, and it turns out there is no difference in response that's gender-related between cats. That's not true with dogs, but it is true with cats. So now, if they were intact, that would be different. If you had two males, things would be different. But if they're all neutered, it's not different. So gender doesn't matter so much. The first question I would ask is, are you sure your cat wants another cat? A lot of cats don't. I cannot tell you the income, bless them, that was generated by people who came to my office and said, I thought my pet was lonely, so I got another one, and now I have nothing but trouble. A lot of cats love being the center of attention. So be sure your cat really is lonely and really wants another cat. Remember, cats are facultatively social, meaning that they can adapt to being social in certain contexts, especially when there's a lot of food. They can also live solitary lives. Now, all cats are different. They don't read those chapters. So your cat might be highly social and affiliative, but might not be. So be sure your cat really wants another cat before you decide to get a pet for your pet. And in terms of before or after, you would be wise to introduce the two cats. Wait until you move to the new place. And as soon as you move in, have one cat in one room, another cat in another room, and expose them to the new place simultaneously, but sort of alternating sharing of mutual space in the beginning.
That makes good sense to me. I just went online to your blog, and I see that you have noted that you're on the show today. The blog is a lot of fun. I've enjoyed looking through it.
Oh, thanks. You know, I've loved doing it. It's a great way to connect, to stay connected to people. The readers have quadrupled in a couple of months, so it's really, really fun. There's so many smart people who are involved in this world, so please join me. It's really easy to get to. It's just theotherendoftheleash.com, name of my first big book, theotherendoftheleash.com. And it's a treat for me to do.
And of course, or just go to your website. I'm sure you click off the website to the blog, too.
Right, right. Absolutely. Just patriciamcconnell.com. We'll have. And speaking of cats, by the way, we just got a new book in that is on the website that is just a wonderful book that can help people train their cat.
Oh.
You know, it's called Starting from Scratch, which I absolutely adore. Totally cracks me up. But it's a great book. The subtitle is something about how to correct behavioral problems. I think it's perfect for how to prevent behavioral problems. It's by Pam Johnson Bennett, and she's really good. I really like her work. So Starting from Scratch, for those of you who have questions about your cat and can't listen to Calling All Pets anymore.
And we'll start from scratch the next time you're on the program. You will be back.
Oh, of course. Just good luck keeping me away, Mueller.
Thanks, Patricia. Patricia McConnell, take a look at her blog, theotherendoftheleash.com, or just go to her website, patriciamcconnell.com. And she'll be back, though, and she'll be able to answer your questions here as we'll continue to have her, obviously, as a regular guest and look forward to every visit. Coming up, Daniel Mack talking with us about rustic furniture here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.